All right. So let's move on to item seven, which is going to be our review of private equity. And I'm going to see if Brian has come over yet. I don't see him yet.
Well, we'll bring Brian over to launch this.
Okay. Yeah. He's going to kick this off. Are Natalie, Tom, and Jose all going to come over as well at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay.
And just for anybody who hasn't had a chance to meet Brian, you know, just a reminder, Brian joined us on July 1st. He hit the ground running. He's been tremendously impactful over these last couple of months in terms of helping us kind of maintain our research pace in private equity and continue to build out new relationships, maintain existing relationships. And I think he's worked on five funds so far, and you know, in 4.5 months, but obviously a very busy time and space here. But Brian comes to us with 20 plus years of experience across a number of both 37 Act funds and foundations and sovereign wealth funds. So a tremendous depth and breadth of experience, and he's handling all our private markets now. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brian and talk about what we've been up to, what he's been up to, and then how we've been working with StepStone.
Great. Thanks, Tim. Good morning, Chair Gordon, members of the board. Today, we will be reviewing our private equity program. I'm just going to quickly share my screen. Assuming you can see that fine.
It's good. Yep. Size is good. You're good.
Perfect. Okay. So we're going to review our private equity program. I'm going to start by, you know, just reviewing overall private equity program, our private equity strategy, and then I'll end with just some key takeaways. And then we're going to turn it over to StepStone, and StepStone will discuss the market environment, our investment pacing analysis, and performance. So I'm going to start with slide four and just talk about the role of private equity in Cesera's portfolio. We have our long-term asset allocation targets here. As Tim just mentioned, you know, our growth portfolio, our liquidity sub-portfolio, and our risk diversifying sub-portfolio. Private equity fits squarely in the growth sub-portfolio. It's here for return generation and really to help the plan grow. So private equity resides in that growth sub-portfolio. The next slide, slide five, just want to reiterate sort of the key participants in the private equity program. There's obviously Cesera. We manage the private equity program. Do top-down strategy. We do bottom-up investment manager evaluation, and we monitor our investment managers. Managers, obviously the general partners are very important. They source, evaluate, execute, and manage the private equity investments. They are buying and selling private equity companies or private investment companies. And then we have StepStone. StepStone provides advice and resources to Cesera on private equity, responsible for the pacing analysis, portfolio monitoring, and reporting. The next slide, slide six, or slide seven, actually. It's just really our approach to private equity investing. And it really starts with that investment pacing plan. And like I mentioned, StepStone will detail that plan for 2023. Investment staff then does a lot of work on the economic outlook, geographies, different sectors within private markets, how we want to implement our private market strategy, and then sub-strategies. And we complement that with a lot of bottom-up work. We're trying to identify the best private equity managers out there. We are building relationships with them. We're evaluating their track record, evaluating the team, evaluating the strategy. And then we really want to ascertain if that is a good fit for Cesera's private equity portfolio. That intersection of top-down and bottom up, that intersection right there is really the sweet spot for us. And that's where we're going to focus our resources and time. It's really these high priority investment opportunities. And really, what is that opportunity set? Slide 8 details that opportunity set. Geography, we are North America focused, although we are looking across the world, have done a lot of work recently in Europe, and are wrapping up a European focused buyout strategy. You know, across sectors, we like to be diversified. So we are looking at all sectors, and most of our managers currently are multi-sector managers. Implementation, we are focused on primary funds, moving away from that double layer of fees on the fund of funds, and really focus on building direct relationships with the best and brightest private equity managers out there. And that really is focused, the sub-strategy we're going to focus on buyouts currently. Next slide, page 9. How does this all come together? A lot of activity has occurred in 2022. We have closed on 4 funds to date with 2 different general partners. So two funds from TPG and 2 funds from Leonard Green. Those total $175 million of commitments. And then we are actively in diligence on 3 additional funds that we hope to close by end of year. One re-up with an existing manager, and then 2 new relationships. If all those come to fruition, we're looking at approximately an additional $250 million in commitments, which takes our 2022 activity to roughly $425 million of private equity commitments. And then on slide 10, 2023, little projections, a little crystal ball into 2023. We anticipate re-up activity to continue to be pretty robust. We're anticipating approximately 3 of our existing general partners will launch their next funds in 2023. We're going to continue sourcing new relationships and new general partners. That's sort of ongoing work for us. That could potentially lead to maybe 1 or 2 commitments in 2023. So we're looking at maybe 4 to 5 commitments across the private market or private equity portfolio. With the projected pacing commitment of approximately $350 to $450 million. And StepStone will really get into that pacing during their presentation. And I'm just going to wrap it up just with some high-level key takeaways. We're really taking this private equity portfolio. It's a very consistent and disciplined approach to the investment strategy. We're being extremely proactive and really taking a multi-year approach to building relationships and trying to identify and partner with sort of the best and brightest private equity managers out there. And with that, I will pause for any questions before we turn it over to StepStone.
All right. Thank you, Brian. I'm looking here to see if I have any hands up.
Scott's not really a question, but I just wanted to compliment Brian and whoever he worked with. It was somebody else as well. This report to me is as good a report to a board as I can ever remember seeing.
Yeah.
It's beautifully done in conveying information about what you're doing.
Yeah, I agree, John, 100%. I had the same reaction to it. I actually understood it, which is remarkable in and of itself. But it really was valuable. So, Brian, kudos. The presentation and the sort of ABCD take you right through it. It was well paced and the right tone, at least for me. And it sounds like
me too.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Other thoughts or comments? No, I'm not seeing any hands up. So let's continue on. So I know, let's see, I got everybody here. I see Natalie, I see Tom. So where's Jose? We got Natalie and Tom?
Yeah, I think Jose is not able to make it today.
Okay.
So I apologize about that.
All right. Well, I'm going to turn the floor over to you, Tom and Natalie, and proceed.
Terrific. Well, it's a tough act to follow there, Brian. I'll try to run us through the market environment quickly, and then Natalie will follow up with more detail on the portfolio. So Natalie, if you want to fast forward to the first slide. Essentially, the points that I'm going to try to get across in the next few minutes, private equity has been a great place to be. Equity markets face some challenges. Verus talked about some of that. But we think that 2023 is going to be a good environment for private markets. And so we think, you know, staying the course, as Brian recommended, is the right thing to do. We also see technology starting to play a role in how we pursue the private markets. So we'll just touch on that briefly. What you see here on slide five is a look at the spread of private markets over public markets. We are using the MSCI ACWI as a proxy for the broader public markets. And over the last 10 vintage years, you can see that the median private equity has done pretty well. So we wanted to compare what happened before COVID. So the blue bars are where things stood as of December 2019 to what's happened since COVID has hit. And those are the green bars. And so basically you had outperformance of about 210 basis points at December 2019. Those same investments are now outperforming by over 700 basis points. So essentially, as the public markets have gotten more volatile, the private market outperformance has increased. Next slide, please. And again, if there's any questions along the way, please fire away. As a result of that outperformance, we've seen tremendous growth across the different private markets. So upper left here is private equity. It's about three times larger than it was in 2009. Real estate has grown by 2.5 times. It's down this year. That's a year-to-date number. So, you know, it's almost 4x if you look at 2021. Infrastructure is almost 10x, and private debt has grown about eight times. So you can see there's been tremendous growth across the private markets because of this outperformance that we've seen over the last decade. Next slide. Where is that growth coming from? Part of it is more general partners. So if we look at the active managers, two decades ago, just under 3,000. At the end of last year, there was almost 7,000 general partners. A lot of that expansion has taken place outside of traditional private market or private equity. So real estate, real assets, private debt, and other areas of private equity like growth equity and secondaries. Next slide. This is just showing the growth in AUM. This is information from Morgan Stanley and Oliver Wyman. They estimated about $7 trillion of AUM in private markets as of 2020. They expect that to grow to over $13 trillion. And a lot of that growth is coming from traditional private markets investors, so sovereign wealth funds, defined benefit pensions. But there's also a fair amount coming from penetration of what we would call the retail channels, high net worth and ultra high net worth individuals. Next slide. So Verus talked a lot about the overall macro environment. So I won't get into too much detail. There's obviously a lot of areas for concern. Next slide. This just shows the progression of expectations over the course of 2022. So in October of 2021 to July of 2022, GDP growth expectations generally went down across four key regions of the world, and inflation expectations generally went up. So lower growth, higher inflation, definitely a challenge for equity markets. Next slide. This just shows a little bit, again, Verus talked a little bit about this, but this compares the 10-year yield on the x-axis to the PE ratio of the S&P 500 and just shows the relationship between interest rates and equity valuations. But we've also highlighted the one standard deviation above and one standard deviation below the trend line. So the strong dash in the middle is the trend line where you would expect valuations to go as interest rates rise or fall. You can see the red dots are basically the four quarters up to June of 2022. So we went from being generally above the trend line before this latest correction to now below the trend line. And I guess the key question here is whether you think the 10-year is appropriately priced. You know, with inflation at 6+%, the 10-year yield at 4%, you know, bond investors are essentially taking a decline in real income. So their expectations for inflation are low. You know, it's anybody's guess whether inflation is really going to come down as quickly as the market expects. This declining interest rate, you know, we've been sort of moving from the right end of this chart to the left end over the last 10 years. That multiple expansion has been a huge benefit to equities and you know, private equity as much as public equities. So we're facing that headwind now as we go back from the left to the right of this page. Next slide. So what we've seen in the second quarter of 2022, if we compare the performance of private markets, so we've got, you know, corporate equities all the way to the left. S&P 500 was down 16%. Private markets, as measured by our Omni system, but also by Burgess, was down about 5.5%. Direct lending was pretty flat compared to the CS Leveraged Loan Index. Real estate actually was up a little bit in the second quarter, and infrastructure was flat to up. So what you see here is private markets are bringing some stability to the overall portfolio. You know, some of that is really due to smoothing from GPs not changing their valuations as quickly. And I think Varys referred to the potential for private valuations to come down to where public valuations are. So we wanted to look through the cycle and see if that sort of catch up was an issue to worry about. So we did this analysis here where we looked from peak to trough and then from trough back to the subsequent peak. What was the downside capture versus the upside capture of private markets? So we looked at the dot-com bubble from 2000 to 2007. We looked at the global financial crisis from 2007 to 2019 on that cycle. And then the COVID crisis from 2019 to today. What we found is that the private markets tend to capture about 75 to about 2/3 roughly of the downside in the public markets, and they capture 100 to 125% of the upside. So essentially the private market valuations, you know, don't come down as far as the public markets, but when the public markets recover on the back end of that, the private markets can capture the upside that happens in the public markets. So that trend, we think, is what brings the stability to the overall portfolio and isn't necessarily injecting more risk from being invested in private markets. That being said, there are some headwinds or areas of concern for private markets. Dry powder is one that people typically talk about. It's at a record high relative to where it's been historically, about $3.5 trillion. If you compare that to the roughly $10 trillion of AUM that Morgan Stanley and Oliver Wyman estimated where we are today, 35%, that's really a fairly reasonable amount of dry powder to have relative to the amount of AUM, given that we expect that dry powder to be invested over the next 3 or 4 years, and for that AUM to actually grow over time. So while it's at a record high, we don't necessarily think that there's too much capital in the private markets. Valuations, private market valuations are coming down. These are entry valuations for deals done in each of these different years. The blue bars are looking at the large end of the private markets, total enterprise value greater than 500 million. The green bars are the lower end of the private markets. And then the orange bars are where the S&P 500 is. So you can see that, you know, the S&P 500 has come down fairly dramatically over the last few years, whereas private markets, at least at the higher end of the market, are still very high. We have a small sample size in 2022, and really only the best companies are getting sold. So it's not necessarily a fair comparison. But as you can see, there's still a delta between the S&P and where the lower end of the private markets are. In you know, on the upper end of private markets, you know, there's the larger deals are getting done around the same size. So we do think that valuations have fallen in the first, second, and third quarters of 2022. We think they're probably bottoming out around the third quarter. And again, we think that you know, depending on what happens with interest, we think that prices are more reasonable in 2023 than they have been. I talked about technology being important. You can see here some investments that different organizations are making into either technology to get data around private markets or to penetrate that high net worth channel that we talked about as being a growth vector. So you know, definitely a lot of players are investing a lot of money into data and technology to help them invest in these markets. StepStone is no different. And one of the areas that we're using data and technology in is on this next slide to sort of look, try to get a better sense of what's happening more real time. So this is looking at the third quarter for private equity. Valuations are down about 2% on an unrealized basis. The cash flows, there's, you know, 4% contributions, about minus three, about distributions of about 3% of the ending Q2 valuation. So overall, we think that you'll see about a 2% decline in valuations for private markets in the third quarter. It's relative to the public markets being down about 6%. So I will, that was a quick tour through the overall market. I'll turn it over to Natalie unless there's any questions.
Any questions for Tom before we turn it over to Natalie? I'm looking here. I don't see any hands up, Tom. So Natalie, the floor is yours.
I do have a question, Scott, if I could.
Jerry.
I don't know that my hand is working. No. I was reminded of something when you brought up an interesting slide. Is there too much money rolling around? I spoke with someone years ago that we were working with, an angel investor, and he summarized the whole thing at the time, which was a number of years ago, I admit, by saying there's more money out there than there are good ideas, which really struck me as an interesting observation. And I'm wondering whether or not there might be some of that same thing still going on now, even though you sort of suggested there isn't. Are you seeing competition amongst VC capitalists and whatnot to sponsor things? Are idea guys able to drive harder bargains with investment folks?
So I think the tables have actually turned. So when markets are more liquid, then I do think that entrepreneurs have more power when negotiating with sources of capital like venture capital and growth equity. What we've seen since the volatility picked up in the public markets is that venture and growth investors are really consolidating what they're willing to invest in to the highest quality companies. So their existing investments, where they have the most confidence, newer ideas are having more difficulty in getting funded. We've seen the typical valuations of seed and early stage rounds come down fairly dramatically. So right now, I would say that the power in those negotiations has very much gone towards the investor side and away from the entrepreneur side, with the small exception being, the really proven growth platforms that are still growing. You talked a little bit with Scott about layoffs, and there have been a lot of announcements of tech layoffs, but we're also seeing a tremendous amount of hiring happening in the tech sector. So that's not getting as much press coverage, but we're not seeing a tremendous amount of tech talent sitting idle on the street. As much as the layoffs are happening, we are seeing good companies being funded and picking that up. So we think there's still a lot of good ideas. We think the ability to invest in those ideas has gotten better with the volatility in the public markets.
Interesting. Thank you.
Anybody else? I don't see anybody, Tom. So Natalie, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you. So Tom spoke about the macro environment and what we're seeing in private equity. I'll spend a few minutes here, talking about the private equity performance that was previewed for you by Scott, Tim, and Brian, but really have enjoyed working with Tim and Brian specifically on your team. And hard to believe, Brian, that you've only been here a few months, because it has been a very active year so far. So can get into the details on that. We're starting here on slide 19 with the private equity pacing analysis. I think, starting with the pacing is intentional because it is relevant to public markets, your overall total portfolio growth, as well as what we're seeing in the private equity markets and expect going forward. So just to start, we're starting with a total portfolio value of around $10 billion at the total Sisera level, and a private equity valuation about $1.1 billion as of June, but cash flow adjusted through 9/30 marks. And if you remember last year, we recommended in connection with your general consultant, Varys, an increase to private markets from 11% historically where we sit today to closer to 15% to really kind of capture additional upside that you can accrue in the private markets. So we set out on that path last year and have updated our pacing analysis. We do it at least annually, if not more, and certainly periodically to capture any changes in market valuations or fluctuations given public market volatility. So here, I would say we are starting with kind of a low watermark probably on the public market valuations relative to the private equity valuation. So if you look at just the private equity portfolio year over year, about an 8% net IRR, but about flat when accounting for distributions on total value. And we're suggesting, as Brian mentioned, kind of a $350 to $450 million budget averaged over the next 10 years. We do want to say that it's important to allow for flexibility within that absolute budget. So we allocate kind of a plus or minus 20% above and below the 350. That's for a couple of reasons. One, is just based on market conditions and volatility. Another reason for allowing flexibility in that budget or a target range instead of an absolute number. It's just the number of available attractive opportunities so that you don't feel forced to deploy capital when attractive opportunities are not available. On the contrary, have the opportunity and flexibility to invest more when more opportunities are available in a given year. We are noting here that there was a decrease on average, again, on average to kind of the annual pacing year over year. And that, again, just reflects the total portfolio valuation at 9/30 that we would look to increase and adapt or update the pacing model going forward. So just to kick off performance, there's a lot of numbers on this slide 21. So I'll just break it down. So, you know, since inception, Sisera has committed $1.8 billion to private equity, and that's across about 60 investments. And then as of June, the portfolio again was marked at around $1.1 billion. So that reflects the net asset value as of June. Importantly, though, the portfolio did grow. So there was about $100 million in net gain in the 12-month period ended June, but distributions outpaced contributions by a good margin. So you can see on the last column, annual change under distributed capital, about $270 million that came back to the plan in the 12 months ended June. And I'll talk to you a little bit later about the continued pace of distributions that are coming off the portfolio, providing liquidity back to the plan, even amidst kind of uncertain market environment. So the since inception IRR, if you look at the second column all the way at the bottom, a 13.5%, again, relatively flat year over year, but incredibly strong since inception returns. And we can break down on the next couple slides how that compares to public markets and in general private market medians. So the portfolio is in a transition. So in 2016, Sisera hired StepStone to help really staff go directly and pursue this direct private equity model targeting primary commitments. Historically, Sisera, if you remember, had almost the entirety of the portfolio concentrated in fund of funds. And we made that choice kind of in connection with staff to go direct in order to one, increase net performance, but also to lower fees. So you can see here on this slide, about 90% of the exposure when we started working with you was in fund of funds. Today, only half of the portfolio is in fund of funds, whereas about the remaining half are in kind of core go-forward relationships. And importantly, as a result of that strategy, we've been able to increase performance, and we'll show you that on the next slide, but also importantly, decrease fees. So a net saving of about $10 million, estimated over the past six years, just in fees alone. And then in terms of performance, last year, this was really the first time that you probably saw this slide. So we talk about the legacy fund to fund performance. That would be the first row in the chart. Historically kind of generating 13.6% net to the plan. And then the go forward core primary portfolio of direct fund managers, which is about 12 investments as of June, but Brian talked about the additional commitments that Sisera has made since. And that portfolio is performing well with, since inception, net IRR of 31%. So indicative of the go forward strategy and the high alpha that you can generate by going direct. I'd also draw your attention to kind of the contributed capital in the core primary fund portfolio. So as of June, sitting at about 180 million, and the market value on that about 214 million. Importantly, there's a sizable amount of capital, close to 400 million of unfunded capital that we think is important to note, that's available to invest in the current market opportunity where valuations are coming down. The private equity performance, as you heard from Varys, has been benchmarked historically against both private and public benchmarks. At the total plan level, we made the decision to kind of benchmark the portfolio against its own performance, but we still like to take a look at how the portfolio is doing relative to private indices, as well as public indices, plus an illiquidity premium. So you can see three different benchmarks of Burgess Private IQ would represent the private equity index. Notably, it is not an investable index, but it is kind of indicative of the general returns that other private equity investors are receiving. And then the S&P 500, just as a benchmark for what you could receive if you had taken the capital and deployed it into public markets as well. And so here you see on this chart, as Tom pointed out, we have been rewarded by being in private equity in the most current kind of amidst the most current kind of public market volatility. And importantly, you can see on this slide, different than past years, every single time horizon, starting with 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, and since inception, has outperformed. The Cicero portfolio has outperformed both the private equity median as well as the S&P 500 plus an illiquidity premium of 400 basis points.
Natalie, we had a comment or a question from Jay Kwan. Jay?
Yep. Thanks. Just a quick question, actually. I appreciate you showing the numbers of the program relative to the benchmarks you have there. I'm wondering how our portfolio looks relative to some of the public plan peer universe, maybe folks that kind of utilize also a direct approach as well.
Yeah, so I would say based on the age of your portfolio, it is in line, if not higher. So most smaller plans than Cicero would be pursuing kind of a fund of funds approach like Cicero did historically. And I think if you look at the performance when we first started working with Cicero, that performance historically has been around 8% net to the plan. So that's what you would expect, kind of 8 to 10% through a fund of funds strategy for smaller plans. The plans that are going direct are probably anywhere in the 10 to 15% range. And as I mentioned, we've kind of made that transition now and kind of halfway through it with half of the exposure today in primary funds versus fund of funds. So very pleased with kind of the since inception performance, but also I would say, importantly, probably the best number to draw your attention to is the 5 year. We've kind of been on this journey for the last 6 years of 23%, so exceptionally high relative to that 10 to 15%.
All right, thank you.
All right, I don't see anybody else, so go ahead, Natalie.
Great. So where has the value come from? We look at this both on an annual change as well as a since inception change. And you can see in the 12 months ended June, the private equity portfolio recorded a gain of close to 100 million. That represents about 8% of the since inception gains. And then the chart on the right shows the since inception gains of $1.2 billion at the portfolio level. But importantly, a significant number of distributions, $1.4 billion compared to the total contributions of $1.3 billion. So again, you have received more in distributions than you have put out. So really at this point, it's a mature portfolio and playing with house money.
That didn't sound too bad to me.
So this kind of places a finer point on the net cash flow. So page 26, you can see the private equity cash flow analysis. In the orange line, you see cumulative net cash flows. Again, last year, 2021, at year end, around this time, we reported to you that it was the first time in Cicera's history that you had kind of crossed the net cash flow positive threshold. So last year, just to provide an update to our annual presentation last November, net cash flows last year of about 54 million. And you can see in the 2022 year to date cash flows, and we've updated this through 9/30, about 97 million of contributions, 134 million of distributions. And that leaves you with kind of a net cash flow year to date of about 95 million. So as it sits today, we do expect 2022 to be another net cash flow positive year. Great that the portfolio is this mature and kicking off so much cash, particularly amid, public market volatility. And then maybe I could just spend a few minutes on diversification. So Brian talked a little bit about this and the focus on North America primary commitments, specifically to buyout funds, and most of those buyout funds being multi-sector. You can see here the majority of the portfolio is in buyout, with about a third in venture. The buyout would increase when capturing some of the fund-to-funds that are diversified across strategy. And then again, based on market value, a good portion of the capital today is in fund-to-funds, but on an exposure basis, when looking at unfunded commitments plus market value, about half of the portfolio in funded funds and half of the portfolio in primary funds that are part of your core go-forward strategy. Breaking it down based on manager and industry, you can see that the portfolio is very well diversified. The top three largest positions are in funded funds, but that's followed by a roster of extremely high caliber, hard to access managers that have continued to kind of put up good numbers for Cicera since you started investing in them in the past kind of 5 to 6 years. A couple of notes. So the next highest exposure would be TPG Capital. That provides diversified exposure, but Cicera also did invest in their healthcare focused fund, adding additional healthcare exposure. Genstar, another diversified fund, also has high allocation to technology, which has performed well, and Stone Point, which is financial services. So a good mix of managers, high quality, again, invested across industries. IT being the largest in the circle on the right on page 28, followed by industrials and healthcare. And we do expect this pie chart to change as the fund-to-fund exposure rolls off and more kind of multi-sector funds and or sector specialists get added to the portfolio. And a final just comment, so this is a runoff portfolio, so we do oversee both private equity and real assets. The real assets exposure is really investments that were made starting in 2016, but haven't been made really for a while now. I think the last investment in this portfolio was 2016. It includes energy, timber, power, and other real assets, including water. And that portfolio, again, is in a runoff. You can see about 10 basis points added to the net IRR year over year. But we expect this to be generally flat going forward. So really expect distributions to come off and this portfolio to shrink over time. So maybe I'll pause there, but I did want to mention, because Tom spoke about technology and that being an important tool that we use here at StepStone and becoming increasingly important in terms of the information that we're able to provide to you as a client. In the daily valuation engine, we do track valuation changes across all of our clients. And specific to Sisera, kind of as we sit here today, I wanted to give you a little bit of guidance on 9/30 valuation specific to Sisera and where they're coming in. So if you just look at the private equity portfolio, we're looking at kind of probably a percent gain, actually, June to September is where kind of we expect your portfolio marks to come out. If you include the high distributions that you've received, that's actually about a net cash flow, about $23 million, then the portfolio is expected on a value basis to be down about a percentage point. So that would encapsulate both the gains, the contributions, and the distributions. So about 84 basis point decrease in the value of your portfolio from June to September. And again, that just has to do with the distributions back to the plan, accounting for the net gain and the high distributions. So I will pause there. Tom and I are available for questions, but I would say very positive news overall coming out of the private equity portfolio. It's working. We kind of talked about this last year, just the performance has been strong. We would expect kind of distributions and total value to increase over time and catch up to the net IRR that you've seen over the last 6 years.
So any questions or comments for Natalie, Tom, and of course, Brian and Tim are on as well. Not seeing any hands up right now, Natalie. So that that must mean it was a thorough, complete, and great report.
Well, so great. Well, we look forward to seeing you guys again. And as I said, it's been a privilege serving the plan. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And keep bringing us great news. And so it's always welcome, particularly at this time of the year with so much tumult in the world. So this is all very positive. But appreciate all of the work and the effort that goes into this. So thank you.
Thank you.